Tristan, I have a confession to make.
Oh my, this sounds serious.
It is serious. I've been slacking on my duties regarding this podcast. You know, your job obviously is to bring in all the research and all of the facts and logic and things like that. And my job is to basically watch Ancient Aliens, and I haven't been doing that.
Oh.
I've just been showing up to this podcast ready for you to talk to me about things that I've not heard of before, but I just find interesting. And so I'm getting back into that. We wanted to talk about a topic today, and I Googled it to find which episode that they talk about this in. And it's a lot. They talk about it a lot.
We're going to need to come back to this because I have been going through the show in chronological order and stopping about every 2 minutes to write an entire episode. So
yeah, so that's part of the reason why I haven't been watching the show as much, is because I've already seen the first like 3 or 4 episodes, and we're on episode 18 of this podcast. We've not even gotten past like episode 2 yet in terms of Ancient Aliens episodes. Yeah. Like they stuff so much wrong into every episode that I feel like, oh, I don't need to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched these months ago. I don't need to watch it again.
It'll go pretty fast when when they run out of ideas, and then there's just seasons of them returning to things they already did. So, yeah.
Yes. So that brings me to what I've learned today. They are on season 14 of this show.
Oh, yeah.
Season 14, episode 4, I can't remember. Something in there talks about this specific topic, the Dogon people.
Or Dogon people.
Dogon, that sounds better. Those Dogon people. All right.
Before we dig in, though, it's probably not aliens. A podcast that now, this is the first episode that you can actually listen to.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Big exciting news since we last recorded, I guess. We finally launched this show.
Just so you know how much of a backlog there is.
So if you are just listening to this episode and you're like, hey, how come they haven't, you know, responded to any of our many criticisms that we've had? It's because we didn't know that you had any until just now. That being said, I think it would be fun at the end of this show to read off some reviews that we've had, if you're cool with that.
Sure. Yeah, we'll finish off the show with that. But first of all, I'm Tristan Johnson, and you are Scott Nicewander.
And I'm Scott Nicewander. We're 18 episodes in. This feels like one of our sloppiest intros yet.
Yeah, we're pros.
Let's talk about some doggone people.
Yeah.
That feels like a joke I shouldn't be making. That feels insensitive. I apologize. Let's talk about some doggone people.
Yeah, let's talk about the Dogon. So essentially, the Ancient Aliens claim is that the Dogon, who are a tribe that live in Mali, have a religion that has details regarding astronomical bodies that could not possibly be seen with the naked eye.
Yes.
That they know about things like the rings of Saturn and the moons of Jupiter.
Ooh. Fascinating. The episode that I was watching said that they knew about Sirius B.
Oh, we'll get to Sirius B.
Which is incredibly tiny, like, partner star. I can't remember the exact term they used for it.
Yep.
Into Sirius A that you can't see from Earth without highly advanced telescopes, but somehow these people knew about it. So tell me, how did they do that, Tristan? It was probably aliens, right?
Well, you know what? It's a certain type of alien. We'll get into that. I do think, though, we have to name this episode the Dogon people are serious business. Businesses in capital B.
That's pretty good.
Okay. So the claim is that these people are, one, remnants of ancient Egyptians for reasons. I don't know. That claim just comes out of nowhere. But that they were obviously, through their cultural practices with their masks and all sorts of various cultural products, it's proof that their funky masks and their knowledge of stellar bodies proves the Dogon people were visited by aliens.
Yes, they were visited by, you're doing the hand gesture thing, the aliens thing.
Yeah.
It's not translating well for an audio podcast, but I will, from this point on, I will describe audibly what Tristan is doing with his hands.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm a bit of a handsy talker, so this is that's a hard medium. but yeah, I thought that we would investigate those specific claims, but also learn a little bit about the Dogon people, because I just decided to go down a rabbit hole and I found out that these are a pretty interesting culture that is something I would not have come across in like a normal history class or anthropology class.
I can't say I've ever heard of these people at all, but after watching about to three quarters of an episode of Ancient Aliens about them, I'm incredibly fascinated to learn what the actual history of these people are, not the History Channel version.
Mm-hmm. And it speaks to our Western educated background that learning about indigenous peoples of Africa is not exactly a thing that we get educated in.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So let's learn a little bit about the Dogon, who are an ethnic group that live in this region of called the Central Plateau of Mali, which is a country in modern day West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of people in this culture ranges between 400,000 and 800,000 members. So it is a smallish group of
okay.
people. They are, however, a major tourist attraction in Mali, specifically because their tradition involves a lot of dances, involves a lot of exotic masks, and they're very known for their like architecture and their sculptures and things like that. So like a very distinctive style. The only thing I think I've ever heard of when I've heard of Dogon people is I think I have seen some of these masks before.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, as like these like kind of almost stereotypical symbol of like what West African indigenous religion looks like. Probably from a Paradox game or something. Yeah, so the Dogon people historically lived in a place called the Bendiagara region. And 1,000 years ago, they collectively refused to convert to Islam when Islam came to Mali and retreated from the areas of the country controlled by Muslims.
Hmm.
Their religion is very interesting. It has a lot of mystery attached to it in that it is a religion that has secret languages, has sculptures that outsiders are not allowed to see, and just has these very peculiar ceremonies, which are called Awa, or it's called the Awa society that puts them on. But they do all sorts of dances for major rituals and religious and social events, mostly funerals. And
so the Awa Society are like the performers?
Yes, they're sort of religious order made up of most of the young men in any sort of city or village.
That's a cool name, though, the Awa Society.
Mm-hmm. The masks they wear are based on animals or deities, and they look truly like amazing. They are cool depictions and cool pieces of art, and they do look interesting and exotic enough that you could, you know, if you were, you know, really trying to find aliens, you could see almost like, oh my goodness, this looks like an alien type of depiction. You probably saw some in the Ancient Aliens episode that you were watching.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everything about it, the whole, all the ceremonies and the dances and the masks, they're just, it's very captivating.
Mm-hmm. So most of what we know about the Dogon come from a blind elder by the name of Ogotemeli, who taught a lot of his religious beliefs to an anthropologist, a French anthropologist by the name of Marcel Griol, in October of 1946. He has done many visits to the Dogon, and he has written a lot about the Dogon, but this was when he learned a lot of their religious practices. Just so that like it all makes sense, Mali at one point was a French colony, so this is, there's going to be a lot of French people in this story.
Gotcha.
And he taught this anthropologist using the same way that he learned to become a holy man himself. He was taught through an oral tradition that went back from his father and grandfather, and until this particular study, the entire history and spiritual understanding of the Dogon was passed down through the oral tradition and oral history.
Hmm.
And this is a, like, you know, more than 1,000-year-old culture.
Yeah. No one wrote it down.
And also because of their remote location, they were very independent culturally, politically, and were actually one of the last people to really fall to colonization under the French.
Oh, wow. Just because they're so isolated?
Mm-hmm. And what that means is that they have a lot of very unique cultural things that developed out of them kind of being semi-isolated in this region. They have thousands of different signs. They have their own system of astronomy and calendrical measurements. They have a completely different system of calculation and anatomical and physiological knowledge. And
even have their
own system of pharmacopoeia, like an idea of like what plants and things are medicines and things like that.
I get what you're saying. They were so isolated that they, like, no knowledge was shared outside or came in from the inside. So like everything is super unique to them.
Or very little anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, it is like kind of a colonialist thing to like say that like these people, just because they live in these like remote places, have no contact with the outside. They do have some contact. They are aware of people on the outside. And we'll get a little bit to that when we get to the talk about Sirius B and everything like that.
Gotcha.
Another unique thing about them is that they are a linguistic isolate. They are related to the Niger. Their language, Dogon, is related to the Niger-Congolese language group, but it is fairly isolated, which means that their language does not have a lot of like dialects and languages nearby that are very similar. So they are very unique. This will come up again in a future episode when we talk about the Zuni people, which are an indigenous people to the American Southwest that also have a very unique language that's sort of its own branch off.
Okay, cool. I'm on board. I'm following everything you're saying so far.
So that's like the basics about the Dogon. They have a very interesting spiritual life that challenges a lot of our discussions about gender. They do a lot of interesting things with gender in their culture, because their main thing in their religion is this concept of twins and duality and dual genders, and that like a lot of their major spirits are considered amorphous, or either like they contain both genders within them.
Interesting.
So they have these twins who are named Numo and Nomo. Numo's sort of like a serpent or amphibian or a lizard, something in that kind of family. Yes. Sometimes described as a fish that walks on land.
This was described in the episode that I watched, the Ancient Aliens episode that I watched. Yes, a being that is like almost like a mer person, but can also just be on land with a fish tail.
Mm-hmm. And that they change colors like a chameleon.
Yeah.
From the writings of Marcel Griot, they're described as Dieu, which is a really weird way of saying gods of water.
Did you take French at all growing up? You're Canadian.
I am. I'm also French Canadian. My grandmother was a Francophone and I lived in Quebec for 3 years. So I speak French.
Okay. I just, because you tackled that term like it was absolutely foreign to you. And I was like,
It's just a tiny bit of a tongue twister. Gods of the water. It's
gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, the Numo are like, they're described this way. They're described as water gods. And it was written, and this is sort of a archaic term, so I'm not going to use it, but they are described as having both sexes within the body. And they also have a other one that is a symbol of the sun and is sort of like a symbol of femaleness and femininity. This is associated with cows and mothers and the color red. And so like a lot of their stuff has to do with fertility and the sun and all that kind of stuff, which is very interesting, especially because in a lot of cultures, the sun usually gets associated with masculinity and the moon typically gets associated with femininity, but not in this case.
Not here. You get a sunburnt cow.
Mm-hmm. So they believe that at the beginning of time that there was a sort of order and everyone was born androgynous, and that single-sex beings didn't exist. They had what are called twin births. But then the sort of inciting event that caused all the chaos that makes the world that we live in was by the birth of a jackal, who was a single-sexed male creature.
Jackal.
And he was born without a soul. And essentially, this was the creature that caused all of life to be born as single-sexed creatures.
All because of one jackal.
Yes. And so the males in Dogon society have to be born as single-sexed males. All humans actually have to be single-sexed. And in doing so, they're preventing a creature like the jackal to ever be born on Earth again.
Now, are you saying that this is like an actual, like the animal, like a jackal? Or is that just like a term for this
being? I think both.
Okay.
So very often men in the Dogon culture are associated with the jackal, and at something called the Sigui Festival, which is associated with death on the earth, is held once every 60 years. And this is the event, this thing that they practice every 60 years is what is associated with the white dwarf star Sirius B.
Sirius B. We're back to it. The little one, the little companion star. That was the term they used, companion star.
Yes.
That came to me.
And we'll get to Sirius B later, but this is the thing that they're talking about.
We'll get to some Sirius B people.
The last thing about their culture is that they practice circumcision. And they use this practice as their way of symbolically decoupling the two sexes from one body. So like, really, there is this like idea of like single sex births are like a sign of like chaos and that the thing that has created this universe. And so there's just like, it's just a really interesting duality and like there's a lot of like gender androgyny in their spiritual world.
It's super different from anything that I've heard. I also don't study this stuff for a living, so I don't know. But you seem taken aback by it as well as something very unique. So that informs me as like, oh, maybe this does sound very distinct of a belief.
It is very cool. It is very unique, but I will say that it's not as unique as you'd think. Like I've done a video in the past that talked about how there is multiple cases of many genders and different gendered roles in different societies around the world, really. So this is just one case of many, which might be a surprise to some people listening to this podcast, but just to know that like there, the idea of like gender being a rigid binary is really a imposition from a few cultures. And that really there is a long history in many places in the world where gender is very different. There is at least one place I can recall that had society with about five genders, and there's a whole lot in between.
Absolutely.
So the leader of a Dogon society is a person by the name of the Hogan.
Hogan of the Dogon.
Exactly. They're usually the spiritual and political leader and elected from a council of the oldest men from the dominant lineage of a village. So that's like a little primer on the Dogon people. This is most of what the information I had. There's actually not like a ton written in English on the Dogon people. This is what I could gather from various like encyclopedia articles and like, you know, doing what I can.
Did you have to read a lot of French?
I did not because I am conversational in French, but I am fairly illiterate.
That's fair. I just, there's an excuse. There's somewhat of an excuse for me not to be very fluent in French being an American where my foreign language credit in high school was computers.
Oh my God.
But I figured you being a much more cultured Canadian might have a better time with that.
To be fair, most Canadians don't learn French either. I went out of my way to learn French in my 20s. So,
wow. Yeah, good on you.
We have to, where I grew up, we have to take mandatory French from fourth grade to ninth grade. That is almost perfectly designed to make sure that the second you stop learning it, you never know anything ever again. So many people took 5 years of mandatory French and don't know any French.
Real? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, time to get back on that Duolingo or that Duolingo. Did that work?
But one cool thing on that is that the Canadian government has a program where they actually will pay you to go and learn French for a month. It's pretty great. I did it. Cool. I did it once. That's how I learned French.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So I did find, though, the book that is the source of the Dogon know about all these hidden stars and it had to be aliens theory.
Is it a different book than the one that we talk about on this show?
Yes. This is the book that inspired the book.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. It's a precursor book.
Yes. It's called The Sirius Mystery.
That's okay. Quality name. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whatever information is in this book, incredible name. Very well done.
Yeah, it's a book that pushes the hypothesis that the Dogon people are preserving a tradition of contact with intelligent extraterrestrial beings from the Sirius star system.
So wait, hold on. It's so does it mean that these people are still in contact?
It means that their oral tradition is preserving preserving information that was passed down to them by extraterrestrials.
Gotcha.
In the book, they argue that these aliens not only taught art and civilization to humans, but were also responsible for originating the pharaohs of Egypt, the mythology of the Greeks, even things like the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Oh, okay.
And his writing about the Dogon came primarily from his interpretation of reading the work of Marcel Griaule.
Oh, so a little spin on it, a little personal little spin on it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the serious mystery consists of a comparative linguistic and mythological scholarship, which is a fancy way of saying he looked at a bunch of different cultures and said, wow, these things look similar. Looking at the Dogon, the Yoruba, who are another ethnic group in West Africa, mm-hmm. Egyptians and Sumerians and their beliefs and their symbols, and even a little bit looking at Greek and Arab mythology as well.
Tristan, they did this I took notes on the episode that I watched. They did this exact thing. I'm pointing at notes. Here's me tapping. Those are my notes that I took. They did the same thing in this episode for different reasons. They were talking about how Dogon sounds similar to the chief of the god of Babylonians, Dagon or Dagon, which sounds similar to Japanese dragons, you know, and Dogu. And so they were all like talking about, yeah, there's like all these amphibious sort of creatures. They're all related to the same place. And then here, can I just read you a quote from this episode? We'll get right back into what we're actually talking about. This is a quote that happened in the episode that I had to pause and write it down because it was the wildest thing I think I'd ever heard. The quote is, words are thought fossils.
Oh my God.
Words are thought fossils. And that is why all of these words sound the same, is because they're all trying to communicate the same thought across all these different cultures, that they're all related to these ancient extraterrestrial beings. And these are fossils of the people trying to tell us that aliens are out there.
I need that quote in a loopy font on a pastel background posted on my wall somewhere.
Words are thought fossils. I mean, look, on one level, like that is like some of the deepest like shit I've ever heard in my life. But also, if you're trying to say that words that sound, two syllable words that sound similar across all these cultures are similar because aliens, then like, I don't know, you don't get to say cool things like that. I don't think you get to.
Yeah, that's in some ways they're right, and there's been some interesting linguistic analysis. On the other hand, saying these things sound like these things without doing the work to find the connection is bad. That's not how you do research.
All right, let's talk about this book. The Serious Mystery.
So the mystery at the center of the Serious Mystery is that the Dogon allegedly acquired knowledge of Sirius B, which is a white dwarf companion star to the star Sirius A, and is invisible to the naked eye.
Yes, this is what they talked about in the episode. You can see Sirius A from Earth with the naked eye, but you cannot see its companion star Sirius B from Earth with the naked eye. So how could they have known about it without high-tech advanced equipment and or just knowledge from alien beings who may have come from that realm of the universe, who may have come from Sirius A and B? I don't know. That's what they're telling me, Tristan.
Well, the author of The Sirius Mystery, who I realize I didn't even name, his name is Robert Temple, tried to make the argument that they made contact with an advanced alien civilization, but he was open to alternative explanations, like that the Dogon had contact with an ancient, very advanced civilization that had advanced telescopes to tell them about these things.
Okay.
And that they've just been lost. You know, more likely things like that the ancient Egyptians had high technology.
Sure.
So he was willing to accept other explanations, obviously.
And the Egyptians got that technology from aliens?
Who knows?
Who knows?
So here are a couple reviews I found of this book, and I gotta read these quotes because I love how sassy reviews to these books have gotten.
This is good. This is gonna be a little teaser from when we read the reviews of our own podcast later on.
This is true. So the first one I've got here is, the whole Dogon legend of Sirius and its companions are riddled with ambiguities, contradictions, and downright errors, at least if we try to interpret it literally. And Carl Sagan, in a book he wrote called Broca's Brain, actually also looked into Temple's hypothesis. as a way to, like, you know, analyze things. And he realized that maybe there's something to point out that the Dogon seem to know about Sirius B, but don't seem to know about any of the planets that are after Saturn, or have, it seems like their knowledge might have come from an alien source, but not an extraterrestrial one.
Mm.
And that they might have gotten this knowledge about this invisible star from the French.
Dun, dun, dun. They're back. Turns out the only Sirius B was the logic in this book.
Yeah, so let's look into where a lot of Temple's information went. Let's talk a little bit about more about Marcel Griol and his work. So several authors have claimed that the Dogon religion incorporates details about extrasolar astronomical bodies that could not be seen with the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
But the more likely argument is that encounters with 20th century European visitors are a very likely, much more plausible source of the information about these stars.
Yeah, yeah. People who had things like telescopes and whatnot, I imagine.
Yeah. Griol lived among the Dogon. He did several expeditions from 1931 all the way to 1956. Some of them were only for a few days. Some of them were for a few months. One time he even stayed for like full 33 days. He did visits in 31, 35, 37, 38. And then from 46 to 56, he went every year. And in one of his... in his 1946 mission, this is the one where he, the October of 46, this is when he spent a lot of time with that wise man. And this is where he learned much of what he ended up writing about Dogon religion.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote that they believe, the Dogon believe, the brightest star in the night sky, Sirius, has two companions, Potolo, the Digitaria star, and Emeyatolo, the female sorghum star. Remember how they have a very strong belief in, like, duality and the dual nature of things?
Yeah, it's coming into play again.
So they believe that the brightest star in the sky has a twin, has a companion.
Oh. So they didn't, hold on. Are you saying they didn't actually know for sure that Sirius B was there, but just because of what they believed, they believed that that Sirius A must have had one?
Oh, it's a little bit more complex than that.
Okay, but, all right.
But we'll build to that. The Dogon believe that Sirius and its companion have a they have an orbit, and that there's a period when Sirius brightens. That's when it's farthest from the star, and it gives off a kind of twinkling effect that suggests to the observer that there are several stars. And this happens about every 50 years. And when they do this, this is when all of the young men in the society go into seclusion for 3 months and talk to each other in a secret language. Like I said, their religion is very deep, very fascinating, has a whole lot of interesting secrets to it.
Holy cow, a little boys club.
So Griol was interested in this star system that was able to describe a star that plausibly did not exist, and wrote that the problem of knowing how, with no instruments at their disposal, men could know the movements and certain characteristics of virtually invisible stars has not been settled nor even posed.
Okay. All right.
Basically him saying he doesn't know how they know this.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair kind of question to pose, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, this became a source of doubt in more recent years. People have had some more questions about the validity of Griol's anthropology.
Uh-huh.
In a 1991 article in Current Anthropology, a anthropologist, now this one's going to be really screwed up, Wouter van Beek concluded that...
Man, your French is getting much better as we go on.
That's not even French.
I know.
he concluded that his research among the Dogon that, though they do speak about Sigotolo, which is what Griol claimed the Dogon called Sirius, they disagree completely with each other as to which star they meant. For some, it's an invisible star that should arise to announce the Sigu festival. For another, it is the planet Venus that, though in a different position, appears as Sigotolo. All agree, however, that they learned about the star from Griol.
From Griol? So the person going there to seek out information is the one that kind of spoiled it for them?
Well, they might have been like, oh, like it seems like they were pointing to both Venus and this star and referring to them both by the same name. And he must have pointed out that, well, Sirius has another star, and they might have integrated that into their theology because they have that strong belief in duality and dualism and that kind of thing.
Wild. absolutely wild.
So that's one anthropological theory.
Okay.
But also other people have pointed out that there are a lot of channels that the Dogon could have gotten this knowledge from, because Griol and another person who I kind of didn't mention, but who went along these expeditions with him, there's other ways they could have gotten Western knowledge besides these two. They weren't as isolated as people like to think they are.
Mm-hmm.
So in a book by Noah Brosh by the name of Serious Matters, he says...
These names, come on, Kane. They're so good.
Yeah. It's a name that invites so many good titles.
It sure is.
But what he suspects is that the Dogon found out about Sirius in 1893 when a French expedition went into their territory specifically to look at a solar eclipse.
Okay.
And they might have, so there's a high chance that the Dogon people met with a group of French astronomers. In 1893, who might know something about Sirius.
They went there and they were just like, hey, do you mind if we kind of camp out, watch this little solar eclipse? And they're like, yeah, sure. By the way, do you know anything about Sirius B? Let me tell you all about that real quick.
So it makes me think that a bunch of astronomers who are willing to go on a 5-week expedition to the middle of West Africa...
Mm-hmm.
Might know a little bit about stars and might be excited to talk about them.
Probably. They're big old nerds. They're big giant nerds. They'll talk to anyone who will listen to them.
The other thing too is that the Dogon likely also just knew about this because they were interested in this information and they just got it through, like, you know, the grapevine of talking to other people who had education. This is obviously a society that was very interested in the stars. So it's not unlikely that they talked about it with other neighbors and, you know, other people. Like, they weren't a isolated island. They were, you know, in contact with other people fairly regularly. And so
They
could have just learned it through the general way that all societies learn about things from other people.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, where I think Ancient Aliens, the show, definitely wants to hype up this idea that they were fully isolated, that the Dogon people were fully isolated from anybody. And I think as you're talking about here and as we've been discussing, like, they weren't 100% isolated. You know, they absolutely had contacts with outside people, as we've seen. And I think that when you have that, when you just have contact with anybody outside of your civilization, you know, you're going to swap info with each other.
Especially if you come from a culture that has a lot of interest in
stars
and such.
If you're seeking it out, if that's the thing that interests you, and then a whole bunch of big French nerds come along being like, we know about the stars. You're like, yes, please. Or anyone else, if you're just out there seeking it, asking those questions. Absolutely.
And also because their religious practices are passed down through an oral tradition, by the time, you know, you go from 1893, you get to 1956. And, this person who was telling this story to this anthropologist might have had a grandfather who was, you know, or might have had might have been a child when these astronomers came by. And so it kind of just gets, like, this is the thing about oral traditions, that when new information gets added, it sort of just gets integrated into their overall belief structure because they believe that this is knowledge. It's like, it's truth, just like, you know, any other scientific fact. They don't disentangle them in any way. So if they learn that Sirius B has a companion star from some astronomers, then they're like, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. Our star has a companion. We're going to name it. We're going to have our whole, like, they have their own whole stellar system. So they had to go through it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense to me.
So it might not be ancient. They just sort of amalgamated this information into their understanding about the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that really puts some doubts into this idea that they had some sort of, like, extraterrestrial knowledge is that they knew about Sirius B, but they didn't know things like how many moons Jupiter has, and they did not know about any planets that were past Jupiter.
They knew about this one very specific star and companion star.
Exactly.
Which means that's where the aliens came from, who told them about this. Mm-hmm. They were just talking about their home turf. They didn't care what was happening at Jupiter.
Exactly. Now, there's another thing that we can add to this, which was that according to the Dogon, there is a falsifiable belief that they had about Sirius that, if it proved to be true, would actually say something interesting, which is that in the 1950s, There was a theory that there was another star in the Sirius system, that there was a red dwarf that was also part of this that we couldn't see.
I've heard of these.
Yeah. And so if there is a Sirius C and they discover this other dwarf star, then the Dogon must have been onto something. This comes from the fact that, you know, there is a theorized extra star. So it's like they knew about what was going on in astronomy before the astronomers were onto it.
Interesting. Okay.
The Dogon believed in a star system called Emeya, or a star that's larger than Sirius B, but lighter and dim in magnitude. Hmm. And we have been studying Sirius for a long time. It's one of our closer stars. And it is a gravitational study showed that there was a possible brown dwarf star orbiting around Sirius, i.e. a Sirius C that has a 6-year orbital pattern.
I didn't even know stars came in the color brown.
A brown dwarf star is interesting because it's basically, I think sometimes what they're called are, well, not hot Jupiters, but they're somewhere halfway. Like Jupiter is sort of a failed star, just two same stuff as a star, but just not big enough to cause nuclear fusion.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's so sad.
Yeah, a lot of the first planets we found with like exoplanet research or what were called hot Jupiters, which were planets that were a little bit bigger than Jupiter and big enough that they could actually like, you know, do a little bit of nuclear fusion. So they're almost like protostars. And a brown dwarf is sort of in that vein.
Just dressing for the job that they want, not the job that they have. One day I'll be a star.
Yeah. So they are big and they're made of hydrogen, but they're not big enough to do the nuclear fusion that you need to really like glow.
Gotcha.
They're approximately 10 to 20 times the size of Jupiter. They're sort of like halfway between a planet and a star. However, a more recent study using infrared imaging has concluded that the chances of there being a triple star system in Sirius is now low.
Yeah. How low?
It can't be ruled out, but the chances are pretty low that there is a third star around Sirius.
Okay. So let me understand if I get what this whole section is. You were saying that the Dogon people do believe that there's a third star in this in a Sirius C?
According to people writing about them.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So there are reports that the Dogon believe that there was another star next to Sirius that was larger than Sirius B.
Yes.
But dim. And so they interpreted that to be a red dwarf.
Yes.
Then astronomers did a study where they then for a little bit were like, hey, they might be onto something because there's a potential that there's a brown dwarf in the Sirius system.
But that turned out not to be, or at least for now, the chances of that are quite low.
Yeah, it can't be ruled out because we haven't done all of the work on this region, but it's lower. It's pretty low now.
Okay. And then so all of that would seem to imply that if the Dogon people did get this information from aliens who are teaching them about the universe, that the fact that they would, at least for now, seem to have gotten that part wrong means we could throw into question this whole theory.
Yeah. If basically the bigger thesis is that while the Dogon, you know, had a strong interest and they knew this one fact about Sirius B, they had very large gaps in their astronomical knowledge based on the fact that they don't have telescopes. And furthermore, that they had made claims about Sirius that are turning out to not look like they're true.
Yeah. All right. That's a bummer.
So yeah, the answer is probably it's probably not aliens, or at least the aliens came not from space, but from France.
You know what I love about that, though, is on the show notes that you share with me before the show, this is under the section called the part where Tristan makes you sad. And I love that the part, you know, sometimes on this show we talk about things that are more
like dark stuff, sad stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes we talk about more dark stuff. Sometimes we talk about stuff being destroyed. Sometimes we talk about really horrible ways that people in societies have been treated. The sad part here is basically that French people might exist, I think.
Yeah. as a French person, I can conclude with this. Actually, there is a dark side of the story, but I'll get to that in just a second. But it does say that, like, you know, this is probably why, if you're going to make claims about a culture, that you talk to people from that culture instead of reading exclusively what Europeans were writing about them.
Mm-hmm.
But there is sort of a modern thing that is a little bit, I want to just draw some attention to, because it is part of what's going on in the world that we probably should pay attention to. And that is, if you've been following the news, you might have heard that there's some political instability in Mali, specifically in northern Mali, and that the Dogon people have been sort of wrapped into violence. They've been experiencing violence because of rising Islamic militants in the region.
Mm.
And this is driving ethnic conflict, border disputes. And because there's very little government presence in this region, it's just the Dogon are in a sort of chaotic and violent situation right now. And I feel like I wouldn't want to tell this story about the Dogon people without mentioning that, you know, this is a bit of a they're in a bit of a dicey situation right now because of this conflict that's happening in Mali. So I wanted to at least, you know, give some respect to the people who we're talking about and their kind of current context.
Yeah.
And if we can, I'll try to look this up, but if we can, I'd like to see if I can find a charity or something that you can give to hopefully help people in Mali. Because it's there's been like a bunch of countries involved. And it's not good.
Absolutely. Well, this section definitely lived up to the name, as it typically does. I absolutely will put charity links in the description of this podcast if we can find some. And hopefully, this is me being incredibly optimistic about a situation that I am just learning about, because I am not very, I've not paid too much attention, sadly. But because we're so behind on video, because we're so behind on podcast, is there a chance that by the time this episode comes out, everything will be fine?
This is a conflict that's been going on now for coming up on a decade. If I remember, like, when it first broke out, Obama was president. So it's I think that there's still quite a lot of, like, I think that it's like the region is just sort of spilling over. You might have heard, like, you know, this is a country that is fairly close to, like, Nigeria, and there's, like, all that stuff with, like, Boko Haram, and like it's there's a lot of political instability happening in sort of the interior of West Africa that I think that this is kind of part of.
Well, now I feel even worse that I'm just now learning about this, but I'm glad that that we could have an episode dedicated to the Dogon people, and hopefully we can find, you know, a charity to help out this whole situation.
Yeah. So that's a very Tristan way to end this show. But this is a real podcast that exists now. Yay.
How about, do you want to go on a little lighter note by reading some podcast reviews real quick?
Yeah, let's get a bit of a chaser. I went a little bit dark at the end there.
No, that's okay. It lived up to the name. I was like making fun of you. Like, oh, the darkest part of this episode is that French people exist. And then suddenly got...
Let me drink some coffee and read the next sentence.
Exactly. What? All right. Let me look at some of these. These are great. Great. We are pulling reviews from Apple Podcasts. I believe that's the only place you can leave a review. Everywhere else, you just sort of stream it and whatever. But thank you to all these lovely reviews.
Beautiful nerds.
Luke Earthcrayer says, I like it for two reasons. Number one, Scott is Scott. Number two, this is a really good idea for a podcast. Ha! Take that, Tristan. I'm already the most beloved host.
Fair.
And I do nothing. I sit here.
You bring the charm.
I hope so. Someone did give us 4 stars. iBassett gave us 4 stars and said could have been 5, but Scott wanted 4. I regret that immediately.
Yeah.
Walt Epithet says, I loved how much knowledge and research they bring to their topics. Can't wait for the next episode. That one's mostly about you.
Oh, thank you. I do drive myself insane for a few days to get these things together.
And then this will probably be the last one I read for now. We'll read more in future episodes. Ray of Sunshine 52 says, thank you, Scott and Tristan. This is the best idea for a podcast. Thank you for breaking down these awful theories about these amazing civilizations. I'm also excited excited about because of how educational this is. Great job and keep going. I think that's a fantastic one to end it on. Thank you so much.
I'm really happy. I wanted to make sure that this show wasn't just debunking, but like that we learned more about the world from the people that they're trying to write off as aliens. So I'm glad that people are liking that or vibing with that.
Absolutely. I'm learning a lot. I'm definitely going to start watching these episodes more rigorously because I have a whole notepad full of things. I just wrote the word sky stones because that's a thing they mentioned. So I've just got a lot more questions that I'm going to throw at Tristan.
Oh yeah, we're going to have to come back to they cycle back to topics. We'll have to cycle back to topics.
Absolutely.
So don't worry,
we'll
be back.
We absolutely have to. And if you have any other, if you don't want to review us on Apple Podcasts, then you can also just tweet at us at @probsnotaliens. Tell us all of your thoughts about this show, any sort of constructive criticism or just things that you're liking, stuff that you're liking. We're like almost 20 episodes in and we're just now being able to hear your feedback. So thank you for bearing with us and hopefully we can adjust the show or just keep doing all the cool stuff that we've been doing.
Yeah, check out It's Props on Aliens on Twitter. If you want to watch more content that we are putting out,
yes.
Scott runs a wonderful channel called NerdSync.
I sure do. NERDSYNC. It's about video essays about comics and Scooby-Doo mostly these days and other nerdy things that I'm interested in. And Tristan has also a fantastic YouTube channel called Step Back History.
Yeah, about how the past is important and intersects with the issues of our day.
And hopefully at this point we have done a collab together about Ancient Aliens and potentially Marvel's The Eternals. We'll see how that goes. I'm excited to see that. And by the time you're listening to it, it should be out. So go seek that out. That's a fun one where you can see us on camera together.
Yeah. And leave reviews and tell your friends because podcasts really only grow through word of mouth. And so
they really do.
Put some words out of your mouth.
Yeah. We don't have any, this is not a money making machine. We don't have sponsors on this. We don't have a Patreon for this. This is just us wanting to do it. And the more people who listen, the more we're motivated to keep going. And so, you know, keep telling people, keep telling your friends, keep listening. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah. Until next time, the truth is out there. Probably.